CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Top story this hour, four more NATO soldiers were killed in two separate attacks by insurgents in Afghanistan today. It comes a day after 30 American service members died when their helicopter was shot down. CNN's David Ariosto reports from Kabul, 22 of them were Navy SEALs, referred to as the best of the best.
Well, it is certainly unprecedented in terms of this campaign here in this theater. Ever since the start of the war back in 2001, we have not seen this kind of American casualties.
A human rights group says eight babies died when Syrian authorities cut power to a hospital in Hama. There's been no comment from the Syrian government. An alliance of Gulf countries is calling on Syria to end its violent crackdown on anti-government protesters. More than two dozen police officers were hurt during riots on the streets of North London. 42 people were arrested as people protested the death of a man they say was shot by police. Journalist Richard Pallett was in the middle of the riot.
Very much the police station on the high street was the focus, but now protesters have looted many shops and they're still causing, you know, widespread disruption in this part of North London.
About 45,000 Verizon workers walked off the job in a contract dispute. The company says the strike won't affect service, but the union says it will. Deion Sanders, prime time, was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame Saturday. He says the game taught him plenty of life lessons.
This game taught me if I get knocked down, I got to get my butt back up again. This game taught me that some things in life you can't do too prematurely. In football, they call it offsides, and life is just life.
Deion was inducted along with six others, including Marshall Faulk and Shannon Sharp. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
I'm in the I need cordless cutting shears to finish this vent work business.
At Grainger, we know what business you're in.
I'm in the if you can help my business, then you'll get my business.
The business of getting things done. That's why we offer over 900,000 products and the support you need to get your job done right and on time. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by one of our branches. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm sure you're thinking, boy, I'd like to pay less for my car insurance, but switching seems like a lot of work. All the hassle and whatnot. Well, I'm here to tell you that is simply not the case. GEICO makes it so easy to switch and start saving money straight away, without getting buried in a ton of paperwork. You know, that actually happened to me once. Literally, I was buried under my income taxes for 6 days. Haunting, really.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Munley, of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And we have a great lineup of guests for you today, including Eva Swerzy, founder and president of Body Elements, Rick Kelly, chief technology officer of Digicon, Chris McGough, founder of The Clearing, and Ernest Foreman, co-founder of Expert Choice and professor of decision sciences at the George Washington University. So let's get started. Let me introduce you to our first guest, Eva Swerzy, founder and president of Body Elements. Welcome, Eva.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
And what is Body Elements?
Body Elements is an endomology center. We've been in business for 8 years now, and I opened the business trying to help women look and feel better. And I found over the years that it was much more than that.
Endomology center. Yes. What does endomology mean?
Endomology is really skin is what endo means. Mm-hmm. And the manufacturer coined it that term, and it's been trademarked endomology. But what it is a deep connective tissue massage technology that has both a holistic component as well as cosmetic. On the holistic side, it helps to increase your circulation by 400%. Which in turn increases your metabolism, helps you burn fat faster, gives you more energy, detoxifies the body.
You had mentioned in the green room something about a regular massage.
Yes.
Compare regular massage versus
endomology.
Thank you very much.
Well, a manual massage increases your circulation about 60%. And endomology increases it up to 400%.
Wow. And what are some of the other benefits of it?
On the cosmetic side, it helps to tighten and tone the skin, reduce the appearance of cellulite for women, helps smooth out the skin, and also to sculpt targeted areas and help you lose inches.
Now, you mentioned women, but women are not your only clients.
They are not. We have also had pro ball players come in, football players, basketball players. It has a whole therapeutic component to it where if you get treatments before you train, it helps you to train more rigorously and gives you a good, better workout. And if you come in after your training session, it helps your body recover 3 times faster than it would normally recover.
Wow. You and your sister founded the company 8 years ago.
Yes, Leslie, my sister, we founded the company 8 years ago.
Why?
Long story short, I had always wanted a business of my own, and she used to take me to cuckoo places to try different spa treatments. We were like Lucy and Ethel.
For example.
So we went to this one, and I'm not saying anything bad about this type of treatment, but it was very funny. It was a wrap. It was a wrap where they actually wrap you, and then they wrap you with bandages on top of that, and you have minerals that are put on your body underneath all that. And then they ask you to go into a workout room and get on spinning bikes and do treadmills and things like that, and it's really hard.
While you're still wrapped.
Yes. So it was very funny. There were all other women in the room that didn't think it was so funny, but we couldn't stop laughing, so we really didn't get a very good workout.
So in the past, your sister would take you to all these crazy, kooky workout things. But one day you noticed something about her.
I did. I was at a family function, and she did not tell me about this. She actually had on a tank top, and there's a difference between Leslie and myself. I have always... I'm a very finicky eater. I try to eat everything very healthy, and I work out regularly. And Leslie tends to do the she likes the shortcuts. Yeah. So at this particular event, she had on a tank top, and I was looking at her arms, and they looked incredibly defined. And I said, "All right, I know you don't work out. What did you do?" And she said, I'm doing endermology. And I said, what is that? So she told me, and it's a series of treatments that you receive, and she was getting fabulous results. So I started researching it, and it felt really good. I didn't want to go into the medical industry, and I didn't want a spa. I wanted something different. I wanted something initially to help women.
Now, getting endermology treatments is different than starting a business.
Yes.
Was there entrepreneurship in your DNA, maybe?
I think that's exactly right, and I didn't even realize it. My mom actually pointed that out to me. I had gone through a career in retail, and then I worked in the corporate world for a while, and then I knew that I wanted to do something. I knew in my heart that I wasn't doing what I should be doing, and when this came about, it felt really good. I just knew it. I knew this was what I should do next.
And so did your mom. In fact, she said something to you.
She did. She was funny. I thought I was all worried because both my parents are entrepreneurs, and I was afraid after they worked so hard all their lives that both my parents were going to say, are you crazy? What are you doing? You're going to be working the rest of your life. But my mom said, what took you so long? I knew that you should be doing this a long time ago, or a business.
Well, help us understand that, because mm-hmm. you said you were shy.
I was.
So how do those two things fit together?
I don't know. I was very shy as a child. I was, in high school, I had a speaking class that I was taking, and the days that I would have to get up and speak, I would not come to school. I would skip it.
So
that's how shy I was.
So do you think maybe some of that shyness played into the type of company that you decided to found, a company that really focuses on helping women to feel and look good?
That's perfect, yes. I think that hits it right on the nail, yes.
Tell us what your mom and your dad did as an expression of their entrepreneurship.
Well, they started a restaurant, a Hungarian restaurant. When I was 10 years old, we moved from Fairfax to Fredericksburg, Virginia. They opened up a Hungarian restaurant for a couple of years, and they decided that wasn't what they really wanted to do for some reason, since they're both Hungarian. I could never figure that out. So they opened up a Carvel ice cream store, which was fun. It was very, very yummy. And then Dad decided to branch out and open up his own pizza and ice cream parlor type thing. Which was fun too. I was working at both of them, and they did those for many years. They had both of those. They became icons in Fredericksburg. Everybody knew them.
Yeah. Did a trip to the ladies' room at 3 years of age prepare you for working at a young age?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I remember I was telling the story earlier. I was with my dad, and I think I was about three. I was in a department store, and at that age, everything looks very big. You know, the store looked like a village. And I needed to go to the ladies' room, and he was going to take me to the men's room is what happened. And I said, I am not going to the men's room. I can do this by myself. And so I did. I went to the ladies' room, and then I got scared, and I came out, and I couldn't find him. And so I ended up having to go to the information center, and they had to call him. Of course, he was like 20 feet away, but I couldn't see him because I was short. And so, yes, I think I was very independent. I wanted to do everything by myself.
So I guess the point is that did not deter you from going to the ladies' room by yourself,
though. It did not, and I kept doing that. I did a lot of things by myself. I remember when I had to take, I told my dad I was ready to take baths by myself without him having, my mother was working, and I'm like, I can do this by myself. I made him get out.
You described yourself in two ways in the green room. One was independent, and the other was jump back on my feet. Was there a time as an adult where you had to jump back on your feet?
I did. I was in retail for many years, and I was in, early 30s. And my husband, my first husband, became very ill and passed away from cancer. And I had two small children, and I had to figure out what it was that I was going to do with the rest of my life, because I couldn't work the hours I was working, and I wanted to be there for them.
So what'd you do?
I went into corporate. I actually went back to school. I went to Strayer College to learn computers because I didn't even know how to turn one on. And I did that for 9 months. And I ended up working for a government contractor for 3 years, learned how to use computers, was a systems analyst, and then I was hired by Dell Tech Systems as a marketing specialist and worked for them for about 3.5 years. And that's when I finally I left and I started my own business.
I can only imagine that any time a spouse dies, one has to jump back on their feet. What in particular was especially challenging about losing? And what was your first husband's name?
Jeff.
Jeff. What was especially difficult about losing Jeff?
Well, he was sick for 14 months, and watching him just go from a 40-year-old, healthy, vibrant person to looking like he was 70 from all the chemicals and surgeries that he had was incredibly an eye-opener, very sad.
Yeah.
And I think after that, I was a different person.
How so?
Do you think in any way that the passing of your husband influences the way you interact with your employees and the way that you're a boss? I would think that something like that makes you pretty empathetic to what can be going on in someone's personal life.
I think so. I always think of what the other person, how the other person feels. It's very important to me. And I treat my company, I want them to have family, you know, enjoy their families. So if they need time off or whatever, I want to make sure that they are there for them. And I know the company that I was working for at the time, it was the Ryder family when I was in retail. They were so supportive to me and actually just they were there the entire time and took care of me as well.
You mentioned that your second husband is your role model. Tell us more.
He is wonderful. I've been married to him for almost 10 years. I've known him for 19. He is just a very special person, very articulate. He is my biggest supporter, and I would not be doing what I'm doing now if it weren't for him.
Yeah. Are your mom and dad aware of your business success, especially with the body element?
Yes.
And what do they think about their
daughter?
They
love it. They love it. I visited them yesterday, and my dad's like, "How's business?" And I said, "Great." And he goes, "That's what I want to hear."
Fantastic. What is the web address for Body Element?
It's www.body-elements.com.
And that's elements plural.
That is correct.
Yeah, so give it to us one more time. Okay. I don't want to miss it.
www.body-elements.com.
Thanks very much. We've been speaking with Eva Swirzy. Eva is the founder and president of Body Elements. I'd like to thank my co-host, Aaron Munley of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, for helping me with the interview.
Thanks, Mike.
Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight.
Thank you, Mike.
This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Ernest Foreman.
Ernest, who are you with?
I'm with the George Washington University.
And you do what exactly for the George Washington University?
I'm a professor, and I teach in the project management program.
And you're here to talk about that program, is that right?
That's correct.
Tell us about it.
Well, the project management program at GW is one of the first project management programs in a business school. It has two distinguishing characteristics. One is it teaches generalized project management, not for a specific industry, such as the airline industry or construction industry. Another distinguishing characteristic is that we have an online component of the program, which is one of the first online project management programs, that is indistinguishable in content from the on-campus program. So the students that take the courses on campus or online have the same material. In fact, some students even alternate between on-campus and online.
Is there something significant about offering a general rather than specific to the industry project management program?
Well, the underlying theory and methodology of project management pertains to any type of industry. And so the students learn more about these other industries, which help them think more about their own industry and also gives them more flexibility in job opportunities in the future.
Yeah. In a few seconds, the ideal candidate for this program would be whom?
Somebody who has a bachelor's degree. The person may or may not already be in project management, but would like to learn more about project management and perhaps consider it as a career.
Give us the web address, please.
The web address is gw.edu, and if you click on the business school, then you'll find the project management program.
And this has been your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Munley of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And I'd like to introduce to you our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Rick Kelly, who is the Chief Technology Officer of Digicon. Welcome, Rick. And what is Digicon?
Digicon is a systems integrator, system services company here in the Washington, D.C. metro area. We have offices throughout the country. We specialize in solving really tough problems that other organizations have been unable to, and that's one of the things that brought me to the company. John Wu founded the company in 1985, so we've been there for a number of years. I joined 8 years ago to take on some of these tougher problems. Kind of an example of what we've done, we've solved a couple big problems. We actually created the first online 1040 form in cooperation with Intuit and the IRS. We built the first kiosk code for the postal services, and we implemented a nationwide management system for all of the FAA. That was the first project I came to join them with.
So do you go looking for problems that seem intractable and other, you know, heavyweight companies have failed to solve, and then you go after them?
I don't know that we always have that much foresight.
Okay.
We tend to get pulled into these quite often, though. If reputation may be a big part of that.
Okay. You've been the chief technology officer for how long?
Just recently. Prior to that, I was a chief architect, and I run one of the operations divisions for the company.
Okay. And what makes you uniquely qualified? And I'm not talking about your business experience, but what goes on inside of your head that makes you able to do these things?
You don't want to know. I think a lot of it is I have this burning desire day in and day day and night to play with technology, kind of a technology technophile. It started back when my dad, when I was like 2 years old, my dad would build his own electronics devices, and I'd be sitting on his lap. And I'd watch, as he did those things. I certainly didn't know what was going on then. But through the years, I learned how to build my own electronics devices and eventually found myself looking at more complex problems.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have three sisters, all younger than myself. They're still back in the greater Chicagoland area.
Were they also technically inclined and shared that with your father like you did?
No, I was the only one. The others are in nursing and other like fields.
So would you say your technophilia, if you want to call it that, was nurture because of the relationship with your dad? Or was there some nature that's just the way your brain works?
I think it's a combination of both. I think part of it was I always wanted to build something to get his recognition that I could accomplish things. But I've been able to apply it to a number of other things. I've taken his grandfather's wristwatch apart and put it back together when I was very young. Luckily, it worked. I have gone through life taking on tough puzzles just because I find them intriguing.
Very young was how young?
I was probably 8 or 9 when I took the pocket watch apart.
How many moving parts in the pocket watch?
I have no clue. There were a lot of them. There were gears everywhere.
And so how did your interest in technology carry over into your education? Did you study something technically related in college?
Well, interesting story. I went to Indiana, and my first year I had a professor in an assembler class who he didn't appreciate my skills as much as I did. And I had written some code. I thought it much more efficient than he. And he failed me on the code. Being a little arrogant because mine was better than his and I was smarter, I kind of brought this out in front of the entire class. What I didn't consider was he was the head of the computer sciences division, and within hours I was informed I was now a poli-sci major.
So this is an example of technical brilliance but maybe a bit of a lack of emotional intelligence. If you don't mind pointing that out, but that's not the case anymore. So how did you learn how to run a business and lead people, yet still be a brilliant technician?
Well, I had a major career defining moment back in I believe it was 93. Some other technicians I was working with, we were doing a lot of systems automation, writing code for systems to manage themselves, almost artificial intelligence type stuff. And I took a bet that I could actually IPL a mainframe. That means take a machine from its cold state where it has no power all the way through the complex process of adding the network communication systems, starting up all the applications, the whole process. And I was, arrogant enough to believe that I could do it. Well, not in the data center, even though at that time it took two or three people to do this with their hands on it. I could do it from an airplane flying at 30,000 feet. We worked for an airline at the time. It seemed like an appropriate challenge. The challenge was taken. I was very successful with it, only to have a vice president of the company find that that wasn't probably the most appropriate use of our corporate resources and give me a career-defining moment where I could either learn how to apply technology to forward the business or find a different career path.
Was that bad news? Did you think, you know what, I just want to keep my head in the technology? Or did you enjoy learning about the business?
It's interesting. Pat Howard, who was the vice president at the time, was also a close friend, and she brought it to me in a way that it was a growing up experience. It was, I can't let you do this anymore, but kind of let's start looking at how we can take that knowledge and help you learn how to apply that to business. And so, the only purpose for technology to exist is to forward our culture, our society, and business. How do you do that? And from that, and several years of experience since then, I've had the opportunity to apply that to forward, whether it's solving some technical issues to help in health and human sciences or other areas, but also to help our business.
So do you feel like a technologist? Do you feel like a businessman? What do you feel like?
I think there's a mix. I think it ends up during the day, I'm more of trying to drive a business, trying to make sure that there's a bottom line return, that we're driving value for our clients. And then some of it has to drift to home and become a technophile hobbyist because I don't have time to actually have hands-on anymore.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you learned that lesson at a young age, though. You had to earn your own way. Did you not growing up?
We did. It was an Irish family. We weren't very wealthy. In fact, we probably didn't qualify for even middle class. But my family had a belief that even though we may have qualified for entitlements, we weren't ever going to take them. And we had to, pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, so to speak, and carry our own weight. So it was a mentality of you don't take anything from anybody. You earn whatever you do.
Why not?
That's a good question. It was the way they brought up. They were second generation immigrants. They never believed that we were entitled to things, that we had to get it fair and square. And I think it's part of our belief system.
So at an early age, you had to figure out how to translate the skill of taking watches apart into earning money.
I think that was probably in my early teen years. If I wanted something, there wasn't an allowance. There wasn't something to go beyond the daily needs. So I had to go find part-time jobs and start different processes to be able to find that money.
Did people think you were special growing up? Gifted? Like, wow, I can't believe he's capable of doing those things?
I think there were some, yes. But I always try to simply think of each and every one of these things as really a numerous set of very simple decisions. And you can take very complex technology issues and break them down to basically binary decisions. So when I do that, then it's easy for me to explain to other people how and why it works the way it does. And I don't think that it was really that special. I just had a gift for being able to sort those things out.
Yeah. Well, what did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a carpenter. He did custom carpentry work within prefab homes. After they were finished, he'd come in and do the final customizations on them.
Was there a point when your father realized, my son's got some gifts that maybe I don't have? And that's not denigrating your father's gifts. and that he may have a better life than I do.
I think that there was a certain point where he looked back and, you know, I had always wanted to win his affirmation and have him acknowledge that I was doing things that were out there. My dad's a brilliant man, very smart, but he had always chose family and putting time into the family over exploiting his career and exploiting all his talent. He's one of the most brilliant men I know. But he's, you know, his life choices were one of, you know, we had, you know, six people in the family, and he wanted to make sure he could provide for them, so he didn't explore out and try and find some of these new things. Over the years, we've had great conversations about that and how the career has gone for me and how how it's flourished and I've been able to benefit from it.
So you've gotten that approval that you were looking for.
Yeah, it took 40 years. But
yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. What is the web address for Digicon?
It's www.digicon.com.
Spell that for us, please, Rick.
D-I-G-I-C-O-N.
Thanks very much. We've been speaking with Rick Kelly. Rick is the Chief Technology Officer of Digicon. I'd like to thank my co-host, Aaron Munley, of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is...
Aaron Munley.
Aaron, who are you with?
The Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce.
And you're here to talk about a special event, is that right?
Right. Our Education Foundation is hosting a very fun and special event on August 30th. It's a karaoke event, Charity Karaoke for Education.
And who should be involved in this event?
It's a really great opportunity for anyone in Fairfax County to come out to support our public school system.
And they will have to do what exactly?
Well, no one will have to do anything, but attendees at the event will certainly have an opportunity to go up on stage to sing a karaoke song to raise money for education.
So tell us how the money-raising part of this works.
Well, you'll come to the event and you'll volunteer as a singer, and then what we'll do is members of the business community will bid to send you up on stage, and their donations will go straight to Fairfax County Public Schools.
And who gets to pick the songs?
The singers are allowed to pick their songs, or if they allow the bidders to pick the songs, then that would be fine, too.
Have you ever done an event like this before?
We really haven't, and it's the only one in our area this summer, so we really encourage everyone to come out.
So you said it's for the Fairfax County Public Schools. Tell us why that's such a good cause.
Well, businesses really work hand-in-hand with education. The folks that are educating our students today are building our future workforce of tomorrow. So as a business community, it's our responsibility to support our public schools.
So if someone wanted to get involved and sing at this event, how do they learn more? How do they get signed up?
It's very easy, Mike. Just go to our website, www.fairfaxchamber.org, on the homepage.
And give us again the date, et cetera.
It is on Tuesday, August 30th from 6 to 9, Westwood Country Club on their pool deck.
We've been speaking with Aaron Munley of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Munley, of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And our next guest is a gentleman by the name of Chris McGough. Chris is the founder of The Clearing. Welcome, Chris, and what is The Clearing?
I'm glad you asked. The Clearing is a complex problem-solving company, and I really think it's a platform for people who are feeling very disempowered right now, young people especially, to come and work and play full out on the things they're reading about in the paper and the country itself.
So these are not engineering problems necessarily. These are what types of complex problems, and who has these problems?
Yeah, specifically, the problems that we're working on have social complexity. It takes a lot of people to solve the problem, and those people have different incentives, different motivations.
And your focus is government, is that correct?
Our focus is problems, and a lot of the problems government has a role in solving, a role.
How complex does a problem need to be before you'll jump in and try to tackle it?
Well, if there's more than seven people, you're going to have a lot of social complexity. People are you know, motivated in different ways. But the problems we're working on are very large in scale, like overfishing in the North Atlantic has nine countries, NGOs, private sector, and government all piled on top, all trying to do a different, you know, thing, try to get a different thing out of that solution. That's a big, complex problem.
You wrote a book called The Primes, and I'm wondering if you'll tell us what the subtitle is, because it kind of speaks to the
How theory. Any group can solve any problem.
And you really believe that?
I do.
Any group can solve any problem on the face of the earth.
History's proven it, or we wouldn't be here.
Wow. We're going to talk more about that in the interview. When did you found The Clearing?
3 years ago.
And why did you do that?
I did that because I was feeling disempowered. I retired, you know, selling Touchstone, and I was sitting around reading the newspaper saying, you know, I've got to do something. I just was getting frustrated, really, that the way things were going. And I thought if we started a company, I was encouraged by people who knew our work, and they said, let's put a company together and get active. So we did.
Give us a really concise mm-hmm. backdrop, because you mentioned Touchstone, mm-hmm. but what I really want to do is focus on this feeling when you were reading the newspaper.
Yep.
So Touchstone is what?
Touchstone was a company we ran for 15 years and sold to SRA, and that company largely was known for its ability to facilitate large group processes.
Got it. And so you sold Touchstone, and you were retired
mm-hmm.
and enjoying retirement, or?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
So why stop?
Well, the one thing that happened when we retired is we traveled, and we traveled to developing nations mostly. And what I saw there was entrepreneurialism very much alive. I saw young people with a sense that they could create a better future for themselves if they worked hard. And when I came back to America, I was seeing it through a whole different lens.
Let me stop you for a moment. What did you expect to see?
I thought I was going to go over there and help people with the money that I got from selling SRA. I thought I was going to be some kind of, you know, angel philanthropist and you know, that whole myth. But I got so much more from traveling to these places, from these people, than I could ever give them.
Give us a couple examples of how entrepreneurship was manifested in these countries.
Well, for those of your listeners who have gotten off an airplane in Nairobi or through Tanzania or into China, you know that every time you turn around, someone is offering to do something for you. And these are young people, old people, and they are good people. They say what they're going to do, they do. And what they want is an exchange for money. I thought there was going to be beggars and all this stuff, but really what I found was people just looking for a way to make money because they have no net. They have no other way to live except make money.
And so that in some way was sort of fundamentally different than what you were seeing over here in this
country?
I don't
see it on the streets of Washington, D.C. I told this story. My son wanted to, he has a beautiful ice cream cart, and he wanted to put it into D.C., and I supported him in that because that was a young person with an entrepreneurial instinct. By the time we got through the... You know, D.C. government spends an enormous amount of money protecting its people from ice cream. And my son looked at that and said, you know, Dad, this is ridiculous. It's not worth my time. What was really happening was a cold towel on an entrepreneurial spirit, and they put it out.
So what was the aha in either Nairobi or Vietnam or China? What was the aha you had?
I think the two things that I'm seeing in the developing nations is a sense of freedom and a sense of my future will be better each day. I don't see a sense of freedom in the young people here in the United States, and there's a growing sense that my next few days will probably be worse than the day I'm having.
And that jolted you out of retirement?
It jolted me. It jolted me. It was like, wait a minute. We're Americans. That can't happen on our watch.
Playing the main touchdown in the United States.
I don't know. It's just nagging. I just wanted to be a good ancestor. I mean, I just wanted to be someone that, you know, made an impact, and I don't want to be, you know, kind of overly stating that. I just thought it's not time to sit around. It's not time to go to Africa to solve a problem. It's time for Americans to be here solving problems also.
And so how did that thought process bleed over into the company that you started here? Is the company part of your effort to sort of help with this entrepreneurial spirit and this spirit of freedom that you're seeing elsewhere?
It really is. We had a set of insights by working for the last 25 years in this problem-solving stuff, and we call it the Primes. I wrote a book on it, and there's 32 insights in there. And the idea was to publish that book for young people so that they could be... But what was missing is a company that was the evidence of that. In other words, we built a company where people from George Washington University, Maryland, the young people that are coming to The Clearing are radiant. And we're outfitting them with the Primes, and they're playing full out in the matters of this town.
In fact, they asked you to start the company.
Yes, there was a movement. Let's start a company that this town needs for what it's facing right now. And we have such... There are such courage in the young people. What they needed was some skills and insights. But they are walking, they're coming in our company right out of college and walking into some of the most complex problems that exist, DHS, the problems in Washington, and they're playing full out. It's amazing.
Some examples of folks who played full out were your mom and dad. I think the
story that made me understand that sometimes you just have to do something. I mean, I grew up in a time where there were bumper stickers, question authority. And I really do believe that this is a country based on freedom. My sister was very sick with an undiagnosed disease, which later became called lupus, and my father was paying cash for all of her medicine. And he was audited by the IRS, an independent businessman was audited by the IRS, and to be quite frank, hounded by the IRS, to the IRS coming to our house one day. My father was having a down day, the IRS guy was kind of being a little rough, and my mother pushed him down the steps, literally down a flight of steps. And she's 80, I think she's 83 now, and she said, I would do it again. Because, you know, it was, what my father commented on is, I pay that guy's salary. You know, my father wasn't cheating or stealing or anything. And that was a big moment for me to see that power in my mother. And I grew up during the Vietnam era, and we questioned authority then. It's time for us once again we can't leave this country's future in the hands of the leadership structures that we have right now.
So were you a completely different person after that event, or did that change later on in life?
No, I think that was a seed. I think that along our life, seeds are planted, and then each one of those seeds, you know, has a purpose. And I think that seed just sprouted recently, where I thought, this is nuts what's going on in this country.
You mentioned that you, quote, floated along for many years.
I think so.
Well, floating along looked like what in your
life? Going to college, getting a job, working in big companies like IBM that were growing at the time, starting a company in an expanding market. I mean, I was really just building things, and in a very fertile time. I think I was very fortunate to start companies when I did. I think that there was a lot of money flowing at that point in time.
Was that meaningful to you?
I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic. And I'm really glad now that the ground isn't fertile and that we're in a lot of trouble, because I feel like that time gave me some preparation to take on this world, where it's very tough to run a business right now. There's low capital in the market, huge problems and inhibitors to starting a business. So I think that was a good thing to do, and it's all being tested now.
So inside of you, is there a fire that burns for the cause of problem solving and social change, or is it more of an intellectual puzzle to be put together and problem solving? What's going on inside of you?
Oh, I'll tell you, 4 o'clock every day when the young people come back in from working in the Washington, D.C. area, and they are just higher than kites. I mean, it's a rush being in part of a community that says, wait, we're the cause in the matter of our lives. We're not passengers on the American bus. We're driving the American bus. You know, it's a small company right now. There's only 20 people there, but around 4 o'clock when they're coming back in, oh, what a rush it is. So I want to have 300 people working at our company going out into Washington, D.C. and really making a matter. I want the people to say, you are the cause in the future. It's not coming at you. You're causing it. And that's a good time. That's a good that gets me out of bed every morning.
If there was one problem in the world today you'd like to solve, what would it be?
Not the world necessarily, but the number one problem I'm focusing on right now is the energy strategy for the United States of America, because it is so upstream from so many other problems. And last several presidents have not. I ask anyone in the radio audience right now, tell me what the United States strategy is for energy. And why have so many administrations not built one?
So is your desired legacy to solve the energy problem, or is it to create this future for young people and energize them? Is it to do something else?
Yeah, no. All I can tell is what I'm very interested in is not solving an individual problem, but greatly enhancing the capacity of the people of the world to solve the problems. If we solve these problems, we're just going to be presented with new problems. It's the capacity to solve problems that I'm so much interested in increasing that capacity.
Did your mom solve a problem that day when she pushed the IRS agent down the stairs?
He never came back. We never saw him again. I'd say she solved a big problem.
Yeah. What was your mom and dad's lasting legacy to you?
Persistence.
Tell us more.
Just, you know, there's up and down times. You just persist. The two things, be intentional and persist variously. Don't hold on to a plan that's not working. You know your goal. When you're blocked, go left, go right, but persist.
Yeah. Give us the name of the book again, Chris.
The Primes, How Any Group Can Solve Any Problem.
And give us the web address for The Clearing.
www.theclearing.com.
The Clearing, just as you would think it was spelled.
Yep.
The Clearing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We've been speaking with Chris McGough. Chris is the founder of The Clearing. I'd like to thank my co-host, Aaron Munley of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion of Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. This is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Frank McMillan.
And Frank, who are you with?
A company called PeopleShare.
PeopleShare, well, what is that?
We're a full-service staffing company.
And what does full-service mean?
Well, we work with people for clerical, admin, light industrial. We're specialized in the legal side, call center staffing.
Given the economy, are people still using staffing companies right now?
Absolutely. We are growing tremendously right now.
So a typical customer for you would be who?
Lawyer's office, any call center, manufacturing facility that is growing or needs to hire some new individuals.
Yeah. Can you give us a success story?
Well, we have a lot of success stories. One of them is just a lot of the people that come into our office just don't interview well. And they just don't have the opportunity to get in to a location. And we give them that first step into the facility. So it kind of gives them a helping hand to get into a premier company. And then they see their work values and ethics. And then they hire them on as a full-time employee.
Why do you feel this is such important work to do?
Well, I really enjoy this because both sides of the customer, the company that I am recruiting for, and the employees that come in, both benefit tremendously from the efforts that I do. So it's very important.
Are there particular types of clients that you look for?
Light industrial and manufacturing are some very important clients, but call center work is very nice too.
Frank, would you give us your website, please?
It is PeopleShareWorks.com. That's www.peopleshareworks.com.
This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Munley, of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And I'd like to introduce to you our final guest, a gentleman by the name of Ernest Foreman. Ernest is the co-founder of Expert Choice and the professor of decision sciences at the George Washington University. Welcome, Ernest. And what is Expert Choice?
Expert Choice is a company that works on process and software to help individuals and organizations make better decisions and to allocate resources.
Can you give us an example of the type of decision that you've helped make easier?
Well, organizations have budget cutbacks, and they don't really know how to cut back. And so one of the common sense things that people think make sense is to just do across-the-board cuts.
Right.
And for many reasons, which we won't get into today, that's not the best thing to do. So we focus on starting with an organization's mission, vision, goals, and objectives, and working through their alternatives, and helping them decide what's best for the organization.
You have a striking example of helping in the healthcare arena. Would you share that with us, please?
Yes, we did a model for helping men make the decision as to the best treatment for prostate cancer. And the difficulty there is that there are several people involved. You have the patient himself. I don't have to be politically correct to say himself or herself in this case. You have the patient's physician. And then you have physicians doing medical research. I worked with a physician at the Case Western Cleveland Clinic, Mike Stofsky, who told me that if you go to a radiologist 9 times out of 10, they'll recommend radiology. If you go to a surgeon 9 times out of 10, they'll recommend surgery. And so what recommendation you get really depends upon who you go to, and your family physician or your specialist doesn't really know the latest literature. And so if you try to have a radiologist read the surgery literature, they don't even understand each other's literature. And so what we do is we enable the synthesis of all the information from the latest medical research to the patient's, physician's judgments, most importantly, to the patient's judgments as to what's more important to them in making the decision for the best treatment.
And as a result of that synthesis, you're able to help a man make the proper decision about treatment?
The best decision for that person. And so that, it depends on the patient. So a good example, one of the treatments or non-treatment for prostate cancer is watchful waiting. So you just wait, and if you're old enough, then that might be the best treatment. Surgery involves medical risks, blood transfusions, HIV, exposure, and so on. But the quality of life, while if you have surgery, is diminished. And so the trade-off between quality of life and these other factors is something that's unique to the individual, and that's why it's the best treatment for that patient.
What is it about your brain that allows you to sort through all of those complex factors and figure it out?
Well, there's a great new book out, fairly new, called How We Decide by Joan Allera. It talks about the two parts of the brain, the amygdala, which has to do with emotional decision-making, and the prefrontal cortex, which has to do with rational decision-making. And those two parts of the brain really help us make decisions.
So how does that apply to your brain? I want to know what's special about you, because most people aren't capable of doing that, obviously. What's so special about you, Ernest?
What's special about me is I got interested in this many years ago, and I spent thousands of hours working on it, and there wasn't anything special to begin with, but there is now.
Yeah.
Was there a specific problem or issue that occurred in your life that really sparked your interest in this?
When I began teaching in the business school, I taught these great techniques to students on how to make better decisions. And then after a few years, I realized students just learned these techniques, took the exam, and forgot them. They never used them again. So there's a big gap between what people learn in school and what they apply in the real world. So I looked for some things that had a strong theoretical foundation that were also applicable in the real world, and I came across this process called the analytic hierarchy process and been working with that ever since.
You mentioned that your daughter has a son with Asperger's. Is what you do at all helpful to her in figuring out how to help her son?
Well, what she has done is to put her energies into finding ways of making the situation better, and in fact, it turns out that many very successful people have Asperger's, and that's one of the reasons that they are so successful. So she's put things into perspective, and she helped develop a program for handicapped people in Summit, New Jersey. She's not a politician nor a lawyer, but she did such a nice job. They voted her Citizen of the Year, and then when the current mayor is retiring now, he asked her to run for mayor. She turned him down twice, but now is running for mayor of the city of Summit, New Jersey.
You grew up in Long Island. Is there anything significant about your growing up that shaped who you are today?
Well, I would think the New York City school system at the time was at its peak. Today, it's not quite such good shape. And so when I went to college, a very good school, the University of Rochester, an Ivy League type school, I didn't have to go to class for 2 or 3 years because I'd already learned most of it in high school.
Does that mean you didn't go to class or you didn't have to?
Well, I didn't go to many early classes.
So what did you do?
Well, I had already learned most of that, and I actually learning after you get your undergraduate degree is really self-learning in a way. You have people guide you. In graduate courses, the professor guides students. They don't really teach the students. And as we get more and more into online teaching, that becomes even a more important aspect of learning.
Were you a genius as a child?
I'm not a genius right now. I do know my former partner was a genius. I can tell he was a genius based upon comparisons with other people. I don't know very many geniuses, but I know I'm not a genius.
Well, what were you like as a child?
Well, I enjoyed sports. I enjoyed photography. I had a dark room, and I'm amazed today at with the computers today, we just turn a little dial and we do photography, but I did a lot of technical things.
Was there anything that anyone would have noticed about you that would have made them say, he's going to found a company someday, he's going to be professor of decision-making sciences, he's going to work on all these complex things? Was there anything somebody saw way back when?
I think I've had very many successful colleagues from my childhood, from my high school days. So maybe it was the environment. Maybe it was a school system. I don't know.
Yeah. Tell us about this cute girl in high school history class, because I think she had a big impact on your life as well.
Well, before we started, you asked me what affected my life the most, and I said in history class, There weren't enough seats to go along, so a cute little girl sat down next to me, pushed me over, and we were married several years later.
Although it took the Navy and Admiral Rick over to get you married. Tell us about that story.
Well, I was in the Naval ROTC program, and they paid for my tuition. We weren't allowed to get married. And so we did schedule our wedding right after I graduated. So right before that, I had an interview with Rick over. And he tried to find an excuse to throw you out of his office because that was his interview technique. So he asked me, did I look forward to going to sea after I graduate? I said, I think it would be fun for a while. He said, well, are you going to get married? I said, yes, I'm going to get married. He said, well, you know, the two don't go very well together. Can't you make up your mind? He threw me out of his office.
And thus you got married.
And he hired me as well.
You said your dad was a taxi driver. Tell us about your dad.
Well, my dad worked very, very hard, and just watching him work inspired me to work hard. Unfortunately, he had a lot of setbacks. The medallion for a taxi at the time was like $5,000, which is a lot of money. Today, I think it's $350,000. I saw it on a TV show the other day. Yeah. But every time he just about had the medallion paid off, somebody would run into him, and he'd wind up in the hospital. And so it was inspiring for me. And my mother was very encouraging as well. And one day my father said, and he had somebody in his cab who said electrical engineering seemed to be a good profession. So I said, okay, I'll become an electrical engineer.
And that's how it happened?
That's how it happened.
Was there anything else that your mom and dad did to shape you? Because I'm really impressed that you have a father who drove a taxi, not an educated job, obviously, probably a very smart man. But he produces an incredibly intelligent, accomplished professional. How does that happen?
Well, he showed us a lot of love.
How did he do that?
I don't know. I've tried to do the same thing with my children, and I think I've been very successful. Mary and I have been very successful because I'm very proud of our children as well.
Yeah. If there was a legacy you wanted to leave behind, whether it be for your parents, for your children, for your wife, for your colleagues, for the world, what would the legacy be?
Be nice to people. Enjoy your life, happiness. There's some research on happiness I'd be happy to tell people about. That's very informative. But the expression that I tell my students is the passage of time will trash all trophies. So don't spend all your time trying to get trophies. Just be nice to people and help society.
Yeah. Give us the web address for Expert Choice, please.
It's expertchoice.com. And the web address for my university webpage is MDM for Management Decision Making .gwu.edu/foreman.
Yeah, give us all of that last piece again, the GW.
Okay, MDM .gwu.edu/foreman.
Thanks very much. We've been speaking with Ernest Foreman, co-founder of Expert Choice and professor of decision sciences at the George Washington University. I'd like to thank all of my guests today, all of our guests, excuse me, Aaron, including Eva Swerzy, founder and president of Body Elements, Rick Kelly, chief technology officer of Digicon, Chris McGough, founder of The Clearing, excuse me, and of course, most recently, Ernest Foreman, co-founder of Expert Choice and professor of decision sciences at the George Washington University. I'd like to thank my co-host, Aaron Munley, who I forgot a moment ago, from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, for helping me structure the interviews. Hopefully we've given you an interesting and educational experience today. More than anyone, I'd like to thank you, the listening audience. If it wasn't for you, we would not even have a radio show. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We've been broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. Thank you so very much for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.